This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk with an update from the Spain SailGP 2022 race. Wind and waves presented a challenge for all the teams. Here is Tom Slingsby of Team Australia.
Yeah, it wasn't easy, those conditions. Just the waves, it's like a washing machine out there. There's so many waves bouncing off the break wall, coming back at us. You're always, in those conditions, you're only one crash away from being passed. Even with a minute lead, if you fill the boat up with water all the way, it takes a few minutes to drain out until you can foil again. But we sailed really well. Jason Waterhouse was MVP today. The flight controller had such a tough job.
Team New Zealand's Peter Burling didn't make it in the final in Spain, but had placed first in France on the last SailGP race.
I think the hardest part about racing today was just actually keeping the boat going well in a straight line. Yeah, we felt like we're doing a really good job of it at times, but then also struggling at other times. And definitely those last couple of races was pretty hard for us. We definitely made a couple of mistakes today, but obviously did a couple of things really well as well. So we're just looking forward to going back and review.
Team Canada won two of the preliminary races, but it wasn't enough to place in the final.
We had a bit of a tough day, to be honest. We had race one, we got a great start and round of mark one in great shape, and just a big hole in the ocean which we put the whole boat into, and it actually kind of destroyed all our front fairings and all the sort of aerodynamic parts of the boat. So we're just a bit slow for the rest of the day, and we did it again in race two. And it's just a case of being quite a new team. It's new conditions that the whole team's experienced for the first time, and it's tough. It's really, really hard.
Jimmy Spittle of Team USA took second place overall in Spain.
We knew that we couldn't push things like ride height and stuff like that. It was just trying to be as consistent as you can. We knew that we were going to have moments. The whole fleet had moments, and it was really just trying to just stay cool and recover and just get back into the race. The toughest moment was when you were going for a jibe. Getting around mark one, as you got towards the wall, it was even rougher because of the rebound happening. So that was the hardest part of the racetrack, I reckon.
Quentin de la Pierre and Team France took their first win, taking first place just seconds ahead of Team USA.
Big battle with the Americans, especially at the leeward mark. And I was struggling doing the manoeuvres with my leeward rake. Was quite new to do it as I can and keep our strategy clean.
The SailGP season championship is still up for grabs, with Australia in the lead, New Zealand second, and France third. This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk.
All right, thank you for that. It is Tuesday at 9:40. That's when we check in with Karen Lyle from SailSportsTalk.com, who will co-host this segment with me. Karen, how are you?
I'm doing just fantastic, thank you. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Let's bring in our guests, and I hope I pronounce the name correctly. It is Sejal Choksi Chug, Executive Director of San Francisco Baykeeper, a fierce defender of the environment. And first of all, Sejal, I hope I said your name correctly. And secondly, how does this translate into the world of sailing?
Hi, good morning, guys. Yes, you did pronounce it correctly. Translates into the world of sailing. So what we saw back in July and August in San Francisco Bay was a huge algal bloom, where basically algae was growing out of control. And that turned the water all red and murky brown. So for sailors, I assume that a lot of them are getting out on the water to enjoy the beautiful scenes and the gorgeous waterway that's San Francisco Bay. And for it to be kind of a murky, yucky-looking brown and smell kind of bad, like, that's just not a place where you want to be taking your boats and enjoying the water. There's also some research that shows that some of the algae was kind of letting off an irritant that might be harmful to people's lungs and can cause kind of allergic reactions. And so people on the water during that time may have experienced a little bit more kind of coughing and sneezing and kind of the reactions that are not really fun. Certainly not an enjoyable way to be on the water.
Well, do they call this red tide? I was out there certainly during that time on my boat sailing and saw the kind of reddish-brown color of the water and could see the effects of it. Certainly not a day that I wanted to go swimming. Tell us a little bit about red tide.
Yeah, so it's caused by a microorganism that's naturally in San Francisco Bay and in many other waters around the world. And basically what happened is that the conditions in the water were such, like, perfect conditions that the nitrogen and the phosphorus was too much, and the algal bloom just basically thrived. And we see this algae growing in the bay at other times of the year and in past years, but it's never grown out of control like this, basically turning the entire San Francisco Bay brown. And so it's just really an unfortunate situation, because what happened when that algae started dying off is that it killed massive numbers of fish. We saw hundreds of thousands of fish wash up to the shoreline. We at San Francisco Baykeeper have a pollution hotline that people can call into. And we were getting reports all at the beginning of August of thousands of fish and bat rays, and I'm talking big fish like sturgeon and striped bass, that were washing up on the shoreline dead, basically suffocated because there wasn't enough oxygen in the water. So it was kind of a 1-2 punch for the bay, where not only was it this murky, yucky brown color, but all of the fish were essentially suffocated and died. And so we saw what was really just the tip of the iceberg with the number of fish that were impacted. And we are still studying to figure out what the actual ecosystem impacts were. So I'm assuming this is going to have some impact on the fisheries of the bay and not really be great for sports fisher either.
You know, I remember, I'm a Bay Area native, and growing up they talked about how since, the Europeans came to California, that the bay has been filled in. Some people say, 10, 20, 30%, it keeps being filled in. And now I know there's much more conservation. I remember the Warriors, they first said, we're going to build an arena under the Bay Bridge. And people said, you can't build onto the bay. We have to stop doing that. So for you at Baykeeper, what is sort of your raison d'etre that you try to do to keep the bay preserved?
Yeah, it's great that you mentioned the Warriors. They listened quite well when we asked them to please not fill the bay and build on it, and they ended up building a beautiful arena over at Chase, and they're actually partnering with us and doing a great job on kind of promoting shoreline resilience and shoreline protection. And that's really what we believe at Baykeeper, that the San Francisco Bay is worth protecting, and it's a national treasure that really we should be preserving the shoreline and making it really accessible for all of the people around the Bay Area to visit and to get in the water and to get on the water in their boats, and really make it kind of a public resource that we can all enjoy by not allowing the spill to happen and not allowing all of the industrial pollution and stuff to really harm the waterway.
You also are part of a worldwide movement with the Waterkeeper Alliance. Can you tell us a bit how, fighting pollution, but also responding to red tides around the world, is helped or benefited by the Waterkeeper Alliance?
Yeah, so San Francisco Baykeeper was a founding member of the Waterkeeper Alliance. We were created 33 years ago, and we were the first baykeeper in the world. And what the movement is really about is having an organization that's got eyes and ears on the water and a pollution hotline, so that people in the area can call in and let us know what's going on. And then what we do is we investigate that information with our boat and our drone, and we determine how to hold polluters accountable. I'm talking big corporate polluters, and also government agencies accountable for the health of our waterways. And since a lot of these algal blooms are caused by pollution sources, in San Francisco Bay specifically, it's caused by an over-nutrient-rich environment. That's where nitrogen is getting into the water from all of our 40 wastewater treatment plants that aren't removing that kind of pollution. But in the Delta, it's actually caused by agricultural runoff, really toxic, polluted fertilizers that are getting in the water and creating dead zones. And then across the country, we're seeing polluted runoff from ag and different farm interests and industries, and polluted runoff from different other sources. And it's causing problems in waterways in Florida and the Chesapeake and the Great Lakes. And even across the world, we're seeing dead zones and algal blooms. And so this is really where we've got warmer waters across the world and conditions where pollution really needs to be better controlled. And that's going to help prevent our algal blooms from getting out of control. And so that's really what Baykeeper and the other 350-plus waterkeepers around the world are really supporting doing, is stopping this pollution from getting into the waterways in the first place so that we can create healthy, resilient, thriving waters.
Sejal, who are some of the, if there are, groups that you lock horns with or that you get pushback from? Do you have any of those adversarial places?
Yeah, I mean, we've got 4 or 5 oil refineries in the Bay Area. They are all seeking to expand and bring in more oil, which is very harmful when you burn fossil fuels for the communities that are there in the area, but also for the planet as a whole. You know, it's definitely one of the main causes of global warming is this fossil fuel burning. We also have the coal industry that's looking to try to build more coal export terminals in Oakland and expand their terminal in Richmond. And so we have a lot of on-the-ground polluting sources that are happening. And then we catch polluters. I mean, we caught the Valero refinery in Benicia dumping petroleum coke into San Francisco Bay in a really harmful way. And so we're now working with them to try to fix their problems. So it's a lot of big corporations that really should know better and should be following the law, and they're just not. And mostly we find that they're just, you know, trying to make a profit and hope that nobody is paying attention. But unfortunately for them, San Francisco Baykeeper is out there on the water watching them and paying attention and then holding them accountable when we find evidence of them actually trying to shirk the law.
You co-founded the Bay Area chapter of Environmental Professionals of Color. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization and how that makes a difference?
Yeah, I did. So we started that back in the spring of 2020, mainly because we were realizing that there really needed to be more support for people of color in the environmental movement. It was wonderful coming up through law school. I went to law school at Cal, and then I started the job at Baykeeper, that I was just really noticing that a lot of people who I was interacting with were just really, they didn't look like me. They were mostly from a different background and had, you know, kind of environmental conservation as their main goal. And I really came from an environmental justice and public health background. And so just bringing more diverse perspectives into the environmental movement in the Bay Area is really important to me personally, especially because we have so many industrial polluters around the Bay. We've got over 1,600 industrial polluters around San Francisco Bay. And that means they're all in our communities. Those are places where people live. And we really want to be focused on bringing those perspectives of those community members into the environmental conversation, because that means that we're going to be protecting public health even better. And that's really important living in the Bay Area. I want my kids to grow up in a healthy environment, have clean air to breathe and clean water. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners care about those issues as well. It's just really critical that we make sure that these companies are doing the right thing and not trying to get away with something.
And then we just have about a minute or two. I love the logo for Baykeeper. It's a fish, but it's also an eyeball. I mean, you're literally out there on the water looking, aren't you?
Yes, we are, and I'm so glad you like our logo. Thanks for saying that. And we've been actually really grateful to be partnering with a lot of our sports teams around the Bay Area. The Giants have been a great partner, and the Warriors have been a terrific partner. So we're really looking forward to working with both of those guys. We recently announced a partnership with Hunter Pence and our favorite Giant, and working on a healthy and resilient San Francisco Bay. So we'll be giving more details about that in the coming year.
There she is, Sejal Choksi Chug, Executive Director of San Francisco Baykeeper. Thanks for coming on and the information as well.
Of course. Thank you both.
Thank you, Sejal.
And Karen, good to talk to you. We'll do it again next week.
We will see you next week.